This episode of the Art of Manliness podcast is brought to you by Mack Weldon. If you're like most guys, you've probably been using the same underwear brand since you were a teenager, but there's been a few companies in the past few years innovating underwear, and one of those companies is Mack Weldon. So one of the things they've done, they've used the fabric they use on the underwear is a naturally antimicrobial fabric, so it eliminates odor. The design on their boxer briefs are done in a way so that the legs don't ride up on you. You don't have to keep shoving your hands in your pants to adjust. The shopping experience at Mack Weldon is fantastic, really easy. And what's great, they also have t-shirts, socks as well, so you can take care of all your undergarments in one stop. If you want to try Mack Weldon out at a discount, go to mackweldon.com and use promo code AOM at checkout for 20% off. Again, mackweldon.com, promo code AOM for 20% off. Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. So we've had Mark Ripetill on the podcast, the author of Starting Strength, but what a lot of people don't realize is that you can get certified to be a Starting Strength coach. It's pretty rigorous, and there are a few Starting Strength coaches around the country. And one of those coaches is a guy by the name of Matt Reynolds. He's a co-owner of a gym in Springfield, Missouri called Strong Gym. It's one of the largest barbell-based strength gyms in the country. He's a former powerlifter himself, strongman competitor. And he also does online coaching. I've been doing some coaching with him online, and I've seen some significant progress with my strength training since I started with him. So I wanted to get on the podcast to discuss his story of how he opened up Strong Gym, because it's a great, inspiring story for entrepreneurs out there, completely bootstrapped operation. But then also we get into some details and some nitty-gritty about strength training. So how barbell training can help if you're an endurance athlete, if you're a trail runner, obstacle course racer, why you need to incorporate strength training into your programming. We discuss why strength training or barbell training is a great stepping stone for someone who's completely out of shape, who's never exercised, and they need to lose a lot of weight, why barbell training is a great way to start that process. We also discuss the prehab and rehab you can do to overcome and prevent injuries that often occur when training. And we also discuss the psychology of strength training. How do you get over those plateaus, right? How to lift weight you don't think you could lift, but your body can actually do, what you can do to psych yourself up. So a lot of great information if you are a strength trainer, I think you get a lot out of it. So without further ado, Matt Reynolds and strength training. All right, Matt Reynolds, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, man.
All right, so Matt is actually, you're the first person I've had inside my closet studio to do the podcast. How does it feel?
This is the first time I've been in a closet with a guy, maybe my entire life. So,
yeah, so anyways, Matt is, I got Matt on here. He is actually, he's a strength coach, owns a gym in Springfield, Missouri called Strong Gym, but he also does online coaching. And he works a lot with Mark Ripetill. We've had on the podcast before with Starting Strength. And so today we're going to talk about Matt's story of how he got into strength training. How did he open up this amazing gym that is one of the largest strength gyms in the country? And then we'll delve into some like strength training questions and helping guys out there get stronger. So Matt, tell your story. How did you get to become a strength coach? What's the story that got to the point before you opened up Strong Gym?
Well, that probably starts with I was very painfully average in junior high and high school. And, you know, I was just a normal guy. I was a smart kid. I was a skinny kid, played a lot of sports, was always usually the last starter on the team. You know, and there were two or three other people on every team that were better than me that didn't start. And so I just worked hard. And so I think part of who I am now as a pendulum swing into kind of the strength and conditioning world came from the fact that I just was really probably unhappy with being average. And so I started to fall in love with strength training my senior year of high school, just did it for sports. And again, wasn't great at sports and seemed to be a little bit better at weightlifting than I was sports. And so got into that and got out of high school, wasn't good enough to play anything in college, but was unbelievably competitive. And so needed an out for that competition. And so shortly after I graduated high school, I actually found an article actually by Dave Tate, who runs EliteFTS.com, called How to Bench Press 600 Pounds. I didn't think that anybody in the whole world could bench press 400 pounds. So this whole 600 pound thing was new to me. And I read the article and it was about powerlifting basically. And it was this introduction to powerlifting. And so, I was 19 years old. It had been 1998, somewhere in there, 1998, 1999, and, realized like, hey, there's a sport where the goal is to eat tons of food and get really big and really strong. And so, that really appealed to me. So I got into powerlifting, trained for powerlifting, did my first competition in 2001, and did okay. You know, it was just kind of still average, and slowly got better and better. And by the 2005 or so, I'd achieved my elite status in a handful of weight classes. And so it was about that time in 2005, I graduated college, and started teaching school and started, working as a strength coach at a big 4A high school in Missouri. And so a big piece of this with the strength coaching side is, I've always been interested in this stuff, and I read everything I could get my hands on, everything that Louis Simmons wrote or all the stuff that the Soviet coaches, pre-communism falling wrote. And, they came over and either stuff had been translated into English or they came over in the 90s and started to teach here. And I just love that stuff. It never wore off. I mean, it wasn't just this phase I went through. And so, I love coaching. So I started coaching in 2005 and it started with mostly high school kids. And the interesting thing about that is that high school kids, a lot of times, are the toughest thing to coach. I mean, they don't listen very well. They don't eat enough. They don't sleep enough. You've got kids, I had eighth graders who were prepubescent for sure. I had kids smack in the middle of puberty. I had kids who had been way out of puberty, and you're trying to deal with all of those kids, 60 of them at the same time in the same weight room. And so, so we did that. And then at the same time, I continued my competitive career. And so in 2005, I switched over and started competing in strongman, like what you see in World's Strongest Man, and, won my pro status in 2006 at Utah Strongest Man. Won that, actually, won the pro card at the same show that Brian Shaw, who is now the World's Strongest Man, we won at the same show, and, competed on the strongman circuit for a few years there. 2008, Open Strong Gym with really no delusions of grandeur. Just wanted a place to train for powerlifting and strength training.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your gym, because it's different from a lot of. It's not like a powerlifting gym, right? Where like it's grungy and like they're playing Pantera, like, and it's not like a nice big box gym where they have a spa and all that stuff. They don't have, like, you guys are focused primarily on barbell training, but barbell training for soccer moms or soccer dads. So how do you make that a viable business? Because most people aren't really into barbells. If they go to the gym, they're going to do machines. So what did you do to turn Strong into one of the largest strength gyms in the country?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. And the reality is, I didn't know it was going to be able to do this. I didn't know we were going to be able to be successful. And so as we have worked, and we really focused on a couple of things. We focused on correct training, so strength training with barbells. And that really is the same thing that most powerlifting gyms do. But you're right, the difference really comes in all of the other stuff. So there are tons of great powerlifting gyms in the country, but they're exactly what you said. They're in a warehouse. There's no air conditioning. There's no heat. There's no showers. They're grungy. They're dirty. And so we looked at how can we make ours better? And so we ended up opening up an unbelievable 15,000 square foot state-of-the-art facility, super clean, and just had an incredible focus on customer service. And then look, the reality is this, I have an unbelievable staff that buy into what we do. And so I have a staff that most of my staff that work for me now, I mean, from the guy, lowest guy on the totem pole all the way up to my managers, started as interns for me. They all have exercise science degrees. The colleges sent them over. They got passionate about what we do. They see that the results that we get, like the way we train works, but it works in an atmosphere that's appealing to business professionals and soccer moms. And so now you've got this gym that's full of people who are in their 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s, and they all deadlift and they all squat and they all bench press and they all press, and they train in a similar style that the powerlifters do.
So at lunch today, you were telling me that one of the things you take pride in about your gym is about the amount of people who can deadlift a certain way. Tell us like what the average weight that people are deadlifting at your gym.
Yeah, so one of the things you'll hear a lot of gym owners or even I would hear high school football coaches say is they would brag about their strongest guy, right? So I've got a high school football kid who deadlifts 600 pounds and who squats 500 pounds. And the reality is that has nothing to do with your program. That kid's a freak. He's gonna squat 500 pounds in any high school in America. And strong is really no different. Some of the best powerlifters in the whole world are at our gym. But if they weren't at our gym, I mean, I'd like to think that some of our atmosphere helps them and facilitates that. But the reality is they would be some of the strongest guys on earth with or without strong. And so for me, what we really like to be able to brag about is that our average guys, we have 100 guys that deadlift at 500 pounds. So a 500-pound deadlift is entirely average at our gym. A 300-pound deadlift for a female, that is an average deadlift for a female. We have a handful of females that deadlift 400 pounds. And I'm not talking about girls that look like they're going to step on a bodybuilding stage, girls that look like guys that read Art of Manliness. We're talking about soccer moms. We're talking about ladies who are 36 years old, who drive their minivan to the gym, drop their kids off at school, and they walk in and they deadlift 350 pounds. That's what they do. And I'm really proud of that for sure.
So, I mean, what's the secret then? I mean, if it sounds like, you know, deadlifting 500 pounds, like that's a goal I've had for a while. Haven't been able to reach it. I'm hoping I can get that with your coaching I've been doing. But what's the secret sauce? I'm sure there's a lot of guys out there that they want to have a 315 pound bench, you know, 405 pound squat, 500 pound deadlift. It sounds like you don't have to necessarily have the genetics for it. You can train this. I mean, what is the secret sauce? Is there a secret?
Well, I mean, there's no magic pill. It's form, programming, atmosphere, right? So form, here's the deal. Starting strength is the best thing ever put out ever for form. Every single person that lifts at our gym that comes in that's a novice does a starting strength program. We teach them how to low bar back squat. We teach them how to deadlift correctly. We teach them how to press. We teach them how to bench press. It's the most authoritative piece ever put together on how to lift. And so everything we do, even when someone comes out of novice programming, so, you know, you hear that name, starting strength. Well, it's for absolute beginners. And it's great for absolute beginners. But the form, the method that we use doesn't change as you become more advanced. And so then outside of that, we start with very basic programming. Programming should be simple, hard, and effective. And so programming is often way too complicated. In the beginning, programming should be, we're going to add a little bit of weight on each lift every single workout. That's it, right? And if that works, why would you do anything else? Like if you can come in and add 5 pounds to your squat 3 days a week, why would you not do that, right? And so people get in a hurry to not do novice programming, and that's a mistake, right? Because they compare it to other sports. Like, I don't want to be a novice basketball player. I want to be an intermediate or an advanced basketball player. But the reality is that the best type of lifter is the novice lifter, because you can get better every single workout. And so then as they move out of that progression, we just still have simple, slightly more complicated progressions for our intermediate and advanced lifters. And then when you take somebody who's lifting exactly correct over a long period of time, and you put them in an atmosphere where the strength standard is, hey, a 500-pound deadlift really isn't that impressive. Now, look, we celebrate PR. So if I have a 79-year-old lady, actually, she turns 80 in 2 weeks. She's 80 years old. Today, she deadlifted 105 pounds for 5 reps. She's 80, right? So we celebrate that as much or more than a 700-pound deadlift, because a PR, a personal record, is a PR. That's huge for somebody. And so when you're in an atmosphere that celebrates PRs, along with this same atmosphere that cultivates correct lifting, correct programming, simple, hard, effective work, that's, our people have an understanding that anything that's valuable is going to take some work. It's going to take some effort. And so the easy way isn't the way that works. Like we don't walk on purple treadmills and read Cosmo magazine. That's not what we do at Strong, right? We squat.
Well, I mean, so it sounds like consistency is a big thing. So I know one of the things that I've gotten in trouble with is that what you just said, that like, I don't want to be a novice. Like, I'm doing the same thing. This is boring. This probably isn't working anymore. So there's this idea that I have to do something new and sexy and like some kind of crazy, I don't know, weird auxiliary exercise to actually get something going. And I just stop doing the programming. Is that one of the big mistakes you see people making with strength training?
Yeah, absolutely. Not only that, you see it with trainers. And so the hard thing to get across for trainers is to, you have to be able to continue to motivate your clients to do essentially the same thing every day for a long period of time. So, you know, day one, they're going to squat, they're going to press, they're going to deadlift. Day two, they're going to squat, they're going to bench, they're going to deadlift. Day three, they're going to squat. Day 50, they're going to squat, they're going to press, And so very quickly, the concept of, we don't even like the term trainer. I don't like to be called a personal trainer. I'm a coach. I coach form. You think about it more like if I were a sport coach, I would be coaching form. I'm not here to count reps. I don't go 3, 4, 5. That's not what you're paying me to do. And so being able to motivate somebody to stick with the basics while the basics work is huge. I mean, that's a big motivating factor. People get bored and they want to move on to something else. And so a good trainer can still add some variation to programming. We can change up the conditioning a little bit. We still do conditioning. We push the prowler. We do things like that that kind of allow people to sweat, allow their heart rate to get up. They can put themselves in great cardiovascular shape, and it gives them enough of that variety that they can stick with the program. And then here's what happens. Somebody comes in and they say, look, here's my goal. I want to run a half marathon in 6 months. Right now, I may or may not think that's a great goal, but I'm not going to shoot down their dreams on day one. I'm going to say, let me show you how strength training will make you be a better half marathoner. And what will almost always happen is 2 or 3 months into the program, they get so addicted to getting strong, they kind of forget about the marathon thing. And they go, you know what? Like, actually, I'm kind of thinking about, you know what? I kind of think I might want to do a powerlifting meet in 6 months. What do you think about that? You know, I think it'd be great, right? It would be great because if you mail in an entry form on a powerlifting meet, your training level goes up a notch because now you go, oh my gosh, I'm not doing this just in front of my coach. I'm doing it in front of a whole group of people. And so, man, there is nothing cooler than seeing a 75-year-old lady doing her first powerlifting meet. That's great, right? And the reality is it's better for her than running a half marathon. It's more healthy. It's less impact on her joints. And so part of that too is just knowing how to work with people. We do low impact exercises. We don't have them doing high rep jumping. We don't have them do, they're not doing stuff that's going to get them hurt. We don't put them in vulnerable positions. And that's where we have this constant commitment to come back to the main barbell lifts because that's where the biggest bang for your buck is.
We're going to take a quick break for your words from our sponsors. All right, guys, fall is here, winter's coming, and one of the things you can add to your cooler weather wardrobe to really up your style game is a pair of nice dress boots. Now, the problem with dress boots is that you're forced to choose between the really high-end boots that cost $500 and are really expensive, or sort of the cheapo brands that just the construction isn't very good and they fall apart. That's why I love Thursday boots, because they offer a middle ground. You're going to get a quality boot that's handcrafted with some of the best leather around, Goodyear welt construction. Prices start at $149, and they have a wide variety of styles and designs. They have a very classic dress boot. They also have a chukka boot. I got the chukka boot, and I'm wearing it right now, actually. Really great for a sort of a casual look, but a little classed up. I like it a lot. Again, $149 for your starting price. You get free shipping and returns. So if you want to check out my favorite boots at Thursday Boots, go to thursdayboots.com/AOM. Check them out, and while you're there, if you see something you like, pick up a pair. Thursday Boots, perfect for work and play. And guys, if you haven't already, there's another podcast I think you would like. It's The Art of Charm, hosted by two guys named Jordan and AJ Harbinger, where they interview people from a wide variety of fields. And a few weeks ago, I talked to Jordan about an episode he did with a guy named Steve Sizzler on how to read people. Here's what he said. All right, so Jordan, a lot of what you guys do at The Art of Charm is helping men get better at social skills. And you brought this guy on, Steven Sizzler, who's an expert in body language. What sort of other advice besides the body reading people, you know, the sort of like arms folded means I'm defensive. What other sort of information do you guys get from him?
Yeah. So first of all, Art of Charm is definitely all about psychology, applied psychology and reading people. And Steve Sizzler was a good one because not only was it, there's an element of body language there, just like we had with Vanessa Van Edwards, but he also teaches people how to read personality archetypes. And his job, where he makes his bread and butter, is by, let's say, getting retained by a Silicon Valley startup to interview you and me or be in the room when we're being interviewed. And he can say, look, in 3 years, you're going to have to fire that guy because he's not going to get along with this other person. And he's not going to be able to do this, 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 and this with this other people because this is how his personality is and you're never going to change it. And in that way, he's almost like this Nostradamus with both the good and the bad, I'm sure, of predicting the ability of people to get along with one another. And he teaches us part of that system, what he looks for when he's hiring people, interviewing people, but also how we can apply that stuff ourselves by deciding, okay, this person has this kind of archetype. This is how they handle problems. This is how they handle conflict and things like that. It's actually one of the most popular episodes of The Art of Charm that I've done this year.
If you want to find more podcasts like that, go check out theartofcharm.com or look for the Art of Charm podcast on iTunes by searching for Art of Charm podcast. Well, speaking on that idea of strength training for half marathons, do you train people who that's what they do, like they do long distance running, and how can strength training help with endurance sports?
Sure. Yeah, we train it all the time. I mean, we get people all the time, especially with this culture right now of Spartan race type things. I mean, I love that outlook. I mean, people that are training for something like a Spartan race, I think you had Joe DeSena on at one point. You know, that's an incredibly tough thing to train for. And so if you think about it like this, let's take something really simple like endurance bicycle ride, right? We're going to ride our bike, I'm going to be endurance, I'm just going to go ride my bicycle, right? So it's not complicated at all. And so I can go out and let's say I can ride, I'm going to ride in a certain gear. Let's say I can squat 100 pounds. I'm not very strong squatter. 100 pounds, my legs aren't really strong. I can ride at 17 miles an hour in a specific gear. And let's say that in that gear 5 I'm riding in, every stroke of the pedal represents 20% of my max leg strength. And let's say I take that person, I take them off the bicycle and I get them in the weight room and I take their squat from 100 pounds to 200 pounds, which still isn't that strong, but I've doubled their leg strength. Now what percentage is every stroke on the pedal? It's not 20% anymore, it's 10%. So now every stroke, it's easier, every single pedal stroke is now easier for that person because I've got their legs stronger, which means they can now ride in a gear that allows them to be more powerful and ride faster, or they can now, because they're only representing each pedal stroke being 10% of the strength, they can now ride longer, twice as long even, right? Because I've doubled their leg strength. So for endurance athletes, the hardest thing to deal with endurance athletes is to get them to either stop or cut back on their endurance training for a season. And right now is the perfect time. Here we are, we're going into holiday seasons, right? We're going into winter time. And so it's not easy to go out and run, trail run when it's 30 degrees outside or 10 degrees outside or ride your bike. So now would be a perfect time to continue to do your endurance training, say once a week, but get in the weight room and get strong 3 times a week. And then watch what happens when the springtime comes. And here's what you'll notice. Your first couple rides, you'll feel a little bit out of shape because you put on some additional muscle and your cardiovascular system isn't there. But your cardiovascular system comes back extremely fast. It's the most quick piece of fitness gained. It's also the quickest thing that you lose. So this is why if you're in great shape and you go on vacation, and you go to Cancun for 10 days and you just sit in a pool and drink margaritas and come home, your conditioning is not very good all of a sudden, but it doesn't take very long to gain it back. Strength is the exact opposite. Strength takes decades to build, but then it doesn't go away very fast, right? So a long, long time. So I could probably, I've bench pressed, 450 pounds. I could probably not bench press for 2 years and still lay down and bench press 300 pounds, right? Well, 300 pound bench press is still fairly strong. But if I got good at cardiovascular conditioning, didn't do anything for 2 weeks and came back and tried to do it, I probably wouldn't be that great for the first workout or two. So when that endurance athlete comes back and gets back on their bike or back on their trail running or back on whatever, the first workout or two isn't going to be great. But by the third, fourth, fifth, sixth workout, they're going to be better than they were before they started strength training, right? So
awesome. That's great. So because we often get whenever we publish things about strength training, we often get the comments that this is going to ruin my endurance training. But yeah, it's great that strength training can actually supplement and even make you a better runner. And here, Matt, another question we often get from readers who are, they read our articles on the site about fitness and strength training. They want to get started, but they're like, I'm really out of shape. Like I am obese like that. And I don't know if I can do this. Any advice to those guys? Should they just get started right with barbell training, even if they're, a couple hundred pounds overweight? I mean, is that something barbell training can help?
Yeah, I do. I actually think it's easier than what you will tend to find is people don't know what else to do, so they start jogging. And so it's not a great thing on your joints for a 400-pound man or woman to go out and start jogging around the neighborhood, right? That's pretty tough on your knees and ankles. And so what you'll find is that you'll gain a tremendous amount of cardiovascular fitness from just barbell training. Theoretically, if you weren't doing anything and you started riding your bicycle, your squat would go up for the first week or two. But after that first week or two, riding your bicycle doesn't make you any stronger. But strength makes everything better for a long period of time. So if I take a kid that says, hey, I want to increase my vertical jump. How do I increase my vertical jump? Well, I can work with him and teach him how to jump correctly. And within the first 2 or 3 sessions, I can get him within 95% of a correct jump. Then what? Then how do I increase his vertical jump? I have to get him stronger. It's the only other option, right? So it's the same thing here. I can take somebody who is really out of shape, what we call totally detrained, like they haven't done anything. They haven't walked, they haven't run, they've sat on their couch, they've eaten a bunch of junk, they've never done anything, and I can take them and bring them into a weight room, and I can teach them how to body weight squat. They might not be able to put a barbell on their back on the first day, but you know what I can probably do is I can probably sit them on a bench or sit them in their dining room chair and teach them how to squat down correctly. and not get on their toes and not get into their knees and be safe for the knees and teach them how to body weight squat. And then I can take a barbell and I can teach them how to deadlift an empty barbell. And then I can take them on that same empty barbell or even something lighter, a very light barbell, a 10-pound barbell, and I can teach them how to press. And that's enough on day one. Thanks for coming in. Come back in 2 days. And what they'll find, they'll get done and they'll go, I don't feel like I did very much. And then the next day they text me or call me. They go, I'm actually kind of sore. You go, I know, you haven't done anything in 20 years, you know? And they come back 2 days later and we go up a little bit more, right? And what you'll find is for those people, they will lose a tremendous amount of fat. I mean, especially people who are really, really like morbidly obese, they'll lose a tremendous amount of fat, gain a tremendous amount of muscle, gain a tremendous amount of cardiovascular fitness. Their blood lipid profile is often better after just a few short months of only barbell training, of no cardio. If I can just get them to basically cut out the McDonald's and cut out the fast food and quit, you know, stuffing their face with junk and just start barbell training, then they make lots of increases. And then we start to add in those additional steps. All right, now we'll bring in some cardiovascular work.
So, you know, Matt, we've had Rip on the podcast. Actually, that's kind of funny. Can you tell us how you met Rip? Because it cracks me up every time you tell me the story. Because for those of you know, like Rip is a character. And I love Matt's story about how he met Mark Ripito. So share that with us, Matt.
All right. So Rip had a coach that was his Olympic lifting coach that I knew before. I had never even heard of Mark Ripito. So I just knew this guy and he was an Olympic lifting coach. He's a fairly well-known Olympic lifting coach. And I had one of my workout partners, a super strong kid, actually one of the strongest kids probably that's ever lived. The kid, he deadlifted 800 pounds when he was 19 years old. And we ended up sending him down. He had gone to Kansas University and needed an internship for his exercise science degree. And we sent him down to Wichita Falls Athletic Club to what is Rip's gym. I just didn't know it was Rip's gym. I just thought it was where this Olympic coach coached. And so he got down there and he calls me back and he said, hey, I saw the best coach I've ever seen today. And I said, what? I said, yeah, it's this Olympic coach that you're working with, right? No, it's not him. It's actually the owner of the gym. And he said, and remember, this kid is smart. I mean, this kid is finishing up his degree in exercise science. He's an extremely advanced weightlifter, very, very smart, very intelligent kid. He said, I worked with a girl for 2 hours on how to squat correctly, and she could not get it. And this guy who's the owner of the gym, he literally sticks his head out the window of his door of his office and just barks like three words at her, and she does it right immediately, right? And I said, what? And he said, yeah, I'm telling you, this guy is, he's the most efficient. He's got the best eye I've ever seen. I said, what? Well, who is he? And he said, well, his name's Mark Ripito, but they call him Rip. He's super weird. He drinks mead from a horn. He's into Norse mythology. And that's pretty much that's really who Rip is. And so I was writing for some online magazines, bodybuilding.com and stuff like that at the time. And I had done some interviews with that Olympic coach. And so I called Rip and a couple days later and introduced myself. And he kind of knew who I was from the interview I had done with his coach and said, hey, I want to interview you. I'd like to just talk to you about coaching and what you do with underweight high school kids. I hear that you're really good with underweight high school kids. And he said, you know, it's actually interesting that you'd ask. I'm actually writing a book called Starting Strength. And so he was smack in the middle of the book. It was still, I think, a year from coming out. But he wanted to be able to start promoting it. And I think I did one of the first interviews he ever did. That article, that interview is still in his lobby. And it's just, so you go in the gym, it's sitting right there and it's and you can still find it online. So.
Well, I'm curious. So, you know, one of the things that I love about Rip, because I went down there, did the videos with him, right? And I was amazed. Like that was the first time someone actually sat me down and told me how to lift. Because I know in high school, I did this usual typical strength and conditioning. And the coaches basically just say, okay, there's a squat rack, there's the bench, that's it. And I learned a lot of bad habits that way. But I'm curious, what makes Rip such a good coach? And like, what should people look for if they're wanting to hire a coach to help with their strength programming? What makes for a good strength coach?
Sure. Well, I mean, there's a handful of things. One of them is that the coach has done it before, right? So not just coached it, but have they actually been under the barbell? Because you have to ask, it is hard to get under three sets of five of heavy, heavy squats. And you're asking something that's not just physically demanding, but extremely emotionally and mentally demanding of your clients. And so if you haven't been there, if you don't know what it's like to get under the bar and think, I don't know if I'm getting through this set, or if you haven't gotten under there and go like, I might pass out on this, or I could die, right? If you haven't been there, how can you ask that of your clients? So one is, have they been there? And then two is, You know, Charlie Munger has a quote that I love, where he says, I've never met or heard of anybody in my life who didn't totally and completely immerse themselves in books, right? And so another thing that makes a good coach is this guy who wants to constantly learn it. I don't care how long you've done it. One of the things about Rip, my favorite thing with Rip, I see Rip at least once a month. We do seminars together. One of our favorite things to do is we go back in his hotel room after the seminars, we hang out, we have a drink, and we talk about the stuff we're reading. So, I mean, here's a guy who's coached for 40 years, right? Barbell training, owns one of the oldest, longest standing single proprietorship gyms in the country. The most well-known strength coach of all time, and the guy is still reading everything he can get his hands on to be a better coach every single day. And so that's one of the things that makes a great coach. And then from there are some actual kind of genetic pieces that are hard to learn. A great coach is a great communicator. And one of the things that makes Rip so great is he's a great communicator, both in person with spoken word and with written word. If you've ever read Starting Strength or you've read the articles that he writes, he's really, really good at communicating. He's efficient and he's effective at communication. And so a good coach has got to be able to do that with their clients. When I'm watching you squat, and we're going to go do a session here in a few minutes, right? So I'm going to use the fewest words I can to fix your squat. That makes a great coach. So if your knees aren't going out and I want them to go out, I'm not going to say, okay, Brett, what I want you to do is I want you to get your knees out. That was way too many words. I have already told you knees out. So if you're in the middle of a set, here's what I have to say. Knees. Or at very worst, knees out, and they go out. And so you've got to have somebody that understands, has the content knowledge, anatomy, physiology, biomechanics, and then is able to communicate what you're doing based on a model. We have a model. Starting Strength has provided that model for us. We know what a squat is supposed to look like. We know what a deadlift is supposed to look like. If I know the model, if I know the anatomy, if I know the physics, I can then watch you squat and compare it to the model. And if it doesn't hit the model exactly, and it probably won't, it's going to be off a little bit, I know what to say efficiently to fix it. That's what makes a good coach. And some of that is experience. I mean, it's just experience.
Well, on that same line, I mean, you've spent almost your entire career coaching, right? Whether it was 60 kids in a single gym, or now with your gym that you have now and your online coaching, I'm curious what your idea of an ideal student, I guess we'd call them. I mean, are there traits that a coachable person has?
Yeah, they'll do anything I say. I've got a kid right now. He'll hear this and he'll know who I'm talking about. I got a college kid, tall, red-haired kid, who literally will do anything I ask and will never question it, right? And look, you've got to have a lot of trust in your coach to do that, right? And I'm not saying you should do that with all of your coaches. You've got to make sure you've got a great coach. But I have a kid who never complains, right? As a matter of fact, this kid squatted. He had rotator cuff surgery about 6 weeks ago. And 5 days after rotator cuff surgery, he was in squatting. We put a safety squat bar on his back, which is a little bit different kind of bar that's got a yoke he can hang on to, and it protects his shoulders. And the kid squatted. And so one of the things I'm looking for is somebody that walks in and says, hey, you know what? I don't know what I'm doing. I've read up enough to know that you know what you're doing. And so I just want you to tell me what to do. I'm not going to complain. I'm going to do it. And so, you know, I've had a lot of clients like that come in and they're a joy to work with. And then what will happen over time is you develop a camaraderie. I mean, you spend a lot of time with your clients, right? So I am really close friends with all my clients, all of them. And so, you know, I've got that same 79-year-old lady. She's the organist at our church. When she has a concert, I go to her concerts, right? We've developed this friendship because we spend a lot of time together every week. And so, but I've also had clients that walk in, and every single day when they walk in, their first thing that they tell you is they complain about something, or they call in every other workout, right? And so consistency is huge. I had a lady that I had for several years that was a great, great athlete. I mean, she had no genetic skills as an athlete whatsoever, but she never missed a workout. And so a lot of times we talk about, I talk about blue collar days in the gym. And so those blue collar days are days that you absolutely do not feel like training. You don't want to train, you don't want to go in, but you go in, you take your time card, you take your punch card, you clock in, you get your work done, you clock out and you leave. Those are the days that make you better, right? So everybody has those days where they go in and everything feels great and everything feels light and they're hitting PRs. Everybody has those days. Those don't make good lifters. Great lifters, people who make incredible changes to their body, are the ones who will never, ever miss. Now, there's caveats there, right? You wake up and you're on 102-degree fever, you shouldn't go to the gym. But outside of that, like, you know, you got the sniffles, your stomach's kind of hurting, or you're just achy or sore, walk in the gym, punch in your time card, punch out, get your work in. That makes a great client.
So, Matt, one thing I've encountered with barbell training is that at a certain point when I started getting really heavy with the weights, injuries start happening. Not really injuries, just weird pains happen. We just published a post of yours about bicep tendonitis. It's something that I've struggled with the low bar squat. I'm curious, besides some of the stuff that we talked about on the website, do you emphasize like prehab or like rehab in your programming that you do with your athletes?
Sure. We do, although I'll say this, that the best prehab is just correct barbell movement, right? So if you do a press correctly, an overhead press, what some people call a military press, what we call the press, if you do it correctly, you will not hurt your shoulders. So if we are having shoulder issues while pressing, there is a problem, right? And at that point, yes, we have to rehab sometimes. And we will do prehab. There are things that I do that I just, sometimes they just make me feel better, right? So there's a lift called a face pull where you take a high cable, like a tricep rope, and you pull, you stand away from it and you pull the bar back towards your temples. And it's just a really good, it opens up your shoulders and makes it feel good on your rear delts. Do I know if that helps my shoulders any for my press? I don't know, but it makes it feel better, right? So a lot of times prehab, which is you're not really hurt, but you're trying to keep yourself not hurt, is a lot of times, I think, more mental. Rehab becomes more of an issue of how to deal with soft tissue. And we deal with that all the time too. So we see bicep tendonitis all the time. You see muscle strains all the time, hamstring muscle strains, bicep muscle strains, pec muscle strains. I tore my pec September 2 years ago now. So just over 2 years ago. And we have methods to fix all that stuff, right? So for us, we have found that being aggressive with the injury will often help it a lot more than letting it sit around. If you just think logically, if you have a muscle strain, which is really kind of a small muscle tear, and you do nothing, right? So if you call your doctor, physical therapist, whatever, they say, oh, don't do anything for 2 weeks, and then come in and we're going to start doing some isolation movements. What happens in those 2 weeks when you're isolating it is it's just going to scar. It's going to scar up, right? It would be much better if I could actually safely move it through a full range of motion and pump a bunch of blood into that muscle, because that blood brings nutrients in it and it fixes it, right? So you're exactly right. In strength training, it has a very low injury rate, like surprisingly low injury rate, especially compared to other sports. I mean, you look at it compared to, say, soccer. Soccer is super dangerous, right? But there's a pendulum swing here. And I have to have this conversation with my clients sometime. When they hire me, they are almost always very, very weak and unhealthy. And so then we spend, let's say, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months together, and they get pretty strong and healthy. And then they have to make a decision when they get pretty strong and healthy. Do they want to stay pretty strong and maintain their healthiness? Or at that point, have they been bitten by the competitive bug, and do they want to get competitive, and do they want to do powerlifting or strongman or Olympic weightlifting or whatever that is? And at the point they decide to be competitive, we're going to start swinging the pendulum away from healthy again and back to a little bit unhealthy. Like, nobody would argue that playing in the NFL is healthy. It's not, right? But rarely does somebody say, oh, you shouldn't play with the NFL because, well, I mean, maybe we're getting that way with head injuries, but it's so that's a decision you have to make. The reality is as you're moving from very, very weak to generally strong, the chances of you being injured are very, very low. Once you've been generally strong, and now you're getting to an advanced level of strength, like where you can compete and do well at competitions, then you absolutely start running the risk of injuries. And so outside of that, we're looking at just really basic. So yeah, we use lacrosse balls and we use foam rollers and we definitely use massage. I'll tell you this, massage is significantly better than lacrosse balls or foam rollers. I mean, significantly better, because you get that lateral shear from their hands. So you can't, when you roll on a foam roller, it just smashes you. You're just smashed. But when you have somebody's hand that can move laterally or like across the surface of your skin, that's really what you're looking to do, because we need to bust up that scar tissue and adhesions and places where the skin and the tendons and the fascia are sticking to muscle where it shouldn't be stuck to. And so we want to be able to really kind of rip that away. So it's almost like combing out the like a female's tangled hair. So she had tangled hair and her hair was all tangled. You're trying to comb it out. That takes a little bit of pain and some lateral shear. You can't just mash on it and have all the tangles go away. And so, yeah, we see that stuff all the time. And it's just, bicep tendonitis is a big deal. Most of the population, by the time they're 40 years old, have some form of a herniated disc in their back. That's a scary word for most people. They think like, oh, I have a herniated disc, I can't do anything. There are four clear grades of herniation. Grade one is not a big deal. Grade two is really not that big of a deal. Grade three is kind of nasty. And grade four means you're going to have surgery on it, right? But most people have a grade one or grade two herniation. And we can work through that and get through sciatic nerve pain.
So another aspect of strength training that I'm encountering, I think we're going to talk a little about this today during our workout, because you sort of mentioned it, is the psychological aspect of training. Because there's a certain point when you get heavy, right? And you squat down with that bar and you're like, I don't know if I can get this up. Or when you're in the middle of a bench, right? And you're like, you have that one rep it's really hard. It's a grind to get out, but you have like two more to go. Does strength training become more psychological than physiological?
Yeah, definitely. If there were a fourth thing that I was going to tell you would be make us successful at strong is that we teach people how to strain. You have to learn how to strain. And straining is uncomfortable, right? Like if you do a super heavy deadlift, you're picking up something really heavy off the floor. The most you've ever picked up off the floor is 100 pounds or 200 pounds. And now you're deadlifting 300 pounds. That feels incredibly heavy. And your mind is saying, put it down, put it down, put it down, right? And so you have to learn how to strain through that. So the best lifters I've ever seen in my entire, and I've lifted with some of the absolute best powerlifters, historically the best powerlifters, guys like Kurt Karwoski. He was never scared of anything he got underneath. It was unbelievable. I mean, the guy could throw 1,003 on his back, 1,003 on his back, and squat it for a double. That something is crazy about that guy. I mean, that's not normal, right? So, but teaching people, like, it's going to be okay. Like, we have spent months and months and months and months making perfect form. What's the worst that could happen? The worst that happened is it's not going to go up. You're not going to hurt yourself because we've taught you that the motor pattern in your brain and the motor pattern established in your body is that the form is going to be perfect, whether it's the empty bar or whether it's your max weight. And so you just decide, like, this is a confidence lift. There's all the time of something like a press, a heavy press. I yell the word confidence all the time to my clients when I feel like they need a boost. I tell them, like, look, I know you can get this. And they get underneath the bar and I go, confidence. I yell confidence. And you can kind of see them like, yeah, I got this. I got this. That's a big piece of it. And so how you take the bar out of the rack, how you're feeling going into it, that's why people listen to the music they listen to in while they're working out, because they're trying to get stuff that pumps them up and kind of gives them confidence. You want a little bit of that adrenaline rush for those heavy sets so that, yeah, it's so much mental. I mean, so much of that is mental.
All right, so Matt, we're coming to an end here. I'm curious, where can people learn more about your work? And can you tell us a little bit about the online coaching? Because I think a lot of people, they hear, like, how can a guy coach me online? Can you tell us a little bit about what goes on with the online coaching?
Sure. Yeah, so first you can find me at Reynolds Strong. I think I'm Reynolds Strong on almost everything, social media. So Reynolds Strong on Twitter, Reynolds Strong on Instagram. I'm probably most active on Instagram, Facebook, Reynolds Strong, and ReynoldsStrong.com. Email is ReynoldsStrong@gmail.com. And then I do online coaching. So here's what online coaching is. I send you, if you're interested in coaching, send me an email. You're not signed up to start. We're not going to guarantee we're going to take money from you. Send me an email. Hey, I'm interested in online coaching. I'll send you a questionnaire. The questionnaire is pretty in-depth. It's going to ask about all your kind of background here. How have you trained? Do you have injuries? What have you done over the last several weeks? What's your diet look like? It's kind of all that kind of stuff. It'll take you a little bit of time to fill that out. Measurements, height, weight, waist measurement, chest measurement, hips measurement. And then basically I sit down and work, and it takes me quite a bit of time. There's a lot of front-end work. So I sit down and I really lay out a program that will work. Now, again, it's not necessarily complicated. A lot of times if it's an absolute beginner, it's going to look a lot like starting strength. And so, well, what am I paying for if I can just get starting strength? Well, what you're paying for is at your last set of every barbell work, you videotape on your phone. I mean, we all have HD cameras on our phone now. So you videotape your last set. And at the end of the day, you text me or email me your sets. And then I'm able to break down those sets. And I really just break down the form of the set. Okay, I see. Here's what's going on. First three reps on your squat were great. I noticed on 4 and 5, the bar slid forward of the midfoot a little bit. So that's why it looked harder, because it didn't stay over the middle of your foot. Deadlift, your low back got rounded a little bit. It's really important to get tight there. You got a belt that doesn't look great. Make sure you get a better belt, right? Whatever. So we can start to tweak those things. And so then each time and then there are times when if I've got clients who have a big day coming up, and I know they've got a big day coming up, they've got to hit heavy weights. They have my phone number, and so they can text me and in the middle of the workout, a lot of times I'll say, okay, here's my last set before the heaviest set. Let's tweak this. And then I text them right back real time. And so look, is it optimal compared to hiring me or hiring a good coach to work with you one-on-one in real time and yelling at you during the set? No, it's not as good. But here's the deal. Most of us are between $100 and $200 an hour to have us train you face-to-face. And online training is going to be closer to that $100 a month for that. And so, or somewhere in that ballpark, right? So it's a lot cheaper. And so, and the, you know, if you live in a town that has a starting strength coach, and you can go to startingstrength.org or startingstrength.com and find starting strength coaches, look them up in your town, then you should hire a starting strength coach. There are no bad starting strength coaches, and there aren't very many of us. I mean, there's just a few, there's 110 or so. But if there's not, and in most cities there aren't, then there's some great options there for online coaching. So I'm one of them that does it, but there are other guys that are good too.
Well, yeah, like I said, I'm doing the coaching with you right now. I'll be posting my progress on Instagram so you guys can follow along with that. Well, Matt Reynolds, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
My guest today is Matt Reynolds. He's the co-owner of the Gym Strong Gym based in Springfield, Missouri. If you live in the area, go check it out. You won't regret it. It's awesome. You can also find out more information about the gym at stronggym.co. And make sure to check out his personal website, ReynoldsStrong.com. Lots of great content there as well. You can find out more information about Matt's online coaching program. And as someone who's doing it right now, who's seen significant progress, I can't recommend it enough. So go check it out. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. For more manly tips and advice, make sure to check out the Art of Manliness website at artofmanliness.com. And if you enjoy this podcast, I'd really appreciate it if you give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Help us get the word about the podcast. Also, give us feedback on how we can improve the show. Thank you for your continued support. And until next time, this is Brett McKay telling you to stay manly.